This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic.
Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Do you reckon social media companies should be held responsible for making young people addicted to social media? Are these social giants doing it on purpose? There's some of the big questions being raised at a landmark court case in the United States right now. Meta boss Mark Zuckerberg grilled over children's Instagram use. Will it change anything? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. In a second, we're going to dive into this case. Also coming up in a bit, Gary Stevenson, the inequality economist with a following of millions. He's in Australia right now and he's sitting down with us.
It's not your fault you're poor, because the governments of this country and the older generations of this country failed to protect an economic system that worked for working people.
Yeah, he's got a lot to say. Gary's economics with us for our long chat of the week that is coming up very soon. First though,
Hack.
Families who say Zuckerberg and others have created a generation of kids hooked on social media.
On Triple J.
Would you describe your relationship with social media as an addiction? Have you ever thought of it in that sense? Like, have you tried to step back before, and did it feel similar to when you were trying to give up drinking or smoking or junk food? When was it that you feel like you got hooked on socials? I'm keen to hear from you. Message in 0439 757 555. So many questions around this are being tested right now in a landmark trial in the United States. And Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg is giving evidence as platforms, Meta, YouTube, have been sued over their effect on the mental health of young people. It's being alleged that the social media companies sought to profit by getting children hooked on social media. And the outcome of this case could have some really big impacts. Hack reporter Alice Angeloni's been looking into it.
Mark, are you excited for your testimony?
This morning, Australian time, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg pushed past a pack of media as he arrived at a court in Los Angeles.
Mr. Zuckerberg, did Meta purposely design the platform to harm children?
He didn't answer that question, heading into court surrounded by a little entourage from his company, some wearing Meta glasses.
Excuse me,
you gotta keep walking.
Someone who did talk to the media were the parents who are suing Mark Zuckerberg's company for the harm they reckon it's done to their kids.
We all need to take a stand against this, because these algorithms can change so quickly.
Let's ask whether Meta, the parent company of Instagram and Facebook and YouTube owned by Google, put profits over user safety.
So at the center of this case is a 20-year-old woman from California known as KGM.
She got on Instagram when she was 9 years old.
KGM alleges that Instagram and Facebook, both owned by Meta, and YouTube, owned by Google, were intentionally designed to be addictive, with features like infinite scrolling, autoplay, and recommendation algorithms. The core argument is that her compulsive use of YouTube and Instagram made her mental health worse. TikTok and Snapchat were originally part of the lawsuit too, but they settled before the trial began. Zooming out, this case is a big deal.
It's a watershed case.
The new big tobacco trial.
It's not the only case like this in the US right now.
There's a 1,500 or so other cases in the queue ready to go.
Okay, so what did Mark Zuckerberg say inside court? Well, the court didn't let cameras or recording kit in, but CBS News correspondent Carter Evans was inside.
And at one point, Zuckerberg seemed a little frustrated with the line of questioning. He said, I don't understand why this is so complicated. We're not perfect. We have been consistent and clear with this over time. We remove them if we find them, referring to kids under 13.
KGM's lawyer brought up internal Meta documents, allegedly showing the company had a strategic goal to increase the time US teens spent on the platform, including under 13s.
So what the plaintiff's attorney is trying to suggest here is that not only did Zuckerberg know that kids were on the platform under 13, but that perhaps he was looking for a way to capitalize on that.
Mark Zuckerberg acknowledged they did have these goals earlier on, but said that later changed. And while Mark Zuckerberg has been grilled by congressional inquiries before...
We do not sell data to advertisers. Well, we don't sell data to
clearly rent it.
Being examined in court is new for him.
He's going to his talking points, and then again and again, the plaintiff's lawyer is able to point out to him, but you do have this email here that says that your company goal was time spent.
Jacob Ward is a technology journalist and host of the Rip Current podcast.
All of that stuff is something he's never really had to face before, and so I think this is going to be a pretty grueling period of testimony for Mark Zuckerberg.
The parents watching the case are also giving their reviews.
He's fumbling, and we just see that as a sign of he knew perfectly well what was going on. The intention of the company was to prey on teens, exploit them so they can make greater profits.
She died because they kept feeding her the content nonstop.
Lori's 18-year-old daughter died by suicide, and she's suing Meta and three other companies in a separate lawsuit.
Her algorithms were changed, and it would start sending her content that said, here's a gun and two bullets.
So what's Meta's defence likely to be?
In their defence, we'll be arguing that this woman's own mental health issues occurred well before she got on the social media.
Ah, and one other thing that happened today, those Meta glasses.
It's an extraordinary, I would say, misstep by the company.
Mark Zuckerberg's entourage getting a stern word from the judge inside court.
Some reason thought it'd be a good idea for the entourage going in there. They're wearing the Meta glasses that have cameras built into them.
You're not allowed to film in courtrooms unless you have permission.
The judge, Carolyn Kuhl, upbraided the Meta team and said, if you guys have recorded anything, you have to dispose of it or I will hold you in contempt.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Ali Angeloni reporting there. We've got so many messages coming through from people. M from Melbourne says the algorithms and the way they push what is essentially softcore porn towards younger viewers is so scary. Cameron from Cavendish in Victoria says, I'm off all social media now and the benefits are great. Of course, I think they're making it addictive. Another person, yes, it is an addiction. And now we have a generation that cannot regulate their emotions or attention span. And someone else says, I purposely didn't download Facebook or Instagram when getting my new phone because of how addictive and time-wasting they are. I just have the messaging apps now. Yeah, a lot of people saying that they're making really big attempts to get away from the technology. Maybe they don't trust themselves on their smartphones. They're getting older phones to get away from it. It is worth reminding people, if this has raised any issues for you, if you do need to speak with someone, Lifeline is always there. 13 11 14. There's a chat service as well available 24/7. All right, we're going to move on to our big chat of the week.
Hack. Ever wonder how the rich get richer and y'all stay broke?
Triple J. How do we make the system fairer for everyday Australians like you? What do we need to do to give you the same opportunities in life that your parents had, that your grandparents had? It's something our next guest has been thinking about for years, and he reckons he's got the answer. Gary Stevenson describes himself as an inequality economist. You might know him as Gary's Economics, and his explainers on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, they get millions of views. Now, Gary thinks he understands this situation better than most because he's lived life being really poor and now, frankly, he's really rich. Not everyone agrees with his views, and maybe you won't either. But Gary is shifting his focus to Australia. He's here for a speaking tour, and he wants you to listen to what he has to say. Look, a big language warning on this chat, some very honest discussion, quite a bit of swearing in here, so it may not be for everyone. But let's welcome him, Gary Stevenson. Thanks for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
It is a fascinating story, yours. You're one of those pretty rare people that both everybody and nobody can relate to in one sense, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Can you tell us what your life looked like growing up in school especially? Because it wasn't the elite privileged childhood that a lot of finance types might grow up in.
I grew up in a place called Ilford, which is a East London / Essex poor area, very, very immigrant area. Always good at maths. Yeah, it was little tiny house. My parents are quite religious. School, like I say, it was a funny one. Like, I grew up in an area where almost no white people, basically. My mum's family is immigrants as well. And I think we kind of grew up with this kind of, that kind of immigrant mentality, like that we're going to make money, we're going to make money, we're here to make money, you know. Do you remember that 50 Cent album, Get Rich or Die Trying?
Yeah.
That come out when I was about, I don't know, 12 or something like that. And yeah, I was poor, but We all thought we was going to get jobs there and we all thought we was going to get rich. I got expelled from school when I was just turned 16 for selling drugs, just selling a bit of weed. I'm not going to pretend I was some sort of big time drug dealer. This is not a Scarface story. we have a thing called the 11 plus in the UK. Do you know what that is?
Nah.
You take an exam when you're 10 years old. And if you pass it, you get to go to a kind of like fancy school for smart kids. It's free.
Wow, school. Okay.
Yeah, it's called the grammar school. That's when I kind of realised, like, oh, we're poor, you know. Then when I got into LSE, London School of Economics, people might not know a bit about LSE, but LSE is, it's not Oxford, but it's like, it's mad fancy. It's international money. Right. So like Gaddafi, the former dictator of Libya, his kids went there.
So you're surrounded by generational wealth. I imagine people who are dressed pretty nicely and you're turning up. Are you in the hoodie there?
Yeah, I went in this. I used to wear Echo tracksuit. Somebody said to me once, that's an interesting accent. Where are you from? And I was like, I'm from just over there, basically.
Down the road, yeah. Do you reckon people underestimated you then? Like, did you sense that your peers around you were like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about? Or
because I grew up not having a desk, whatever. Like my whole plan was always you go to the lecture and you understand it. So I used to walk into this lecture and sit on the front row and ask like the lecturer questions and this kind of thing. And then I did really well in my first year exams, right? And then I come in my second year, it was mad. Suddenly everybody knew who I was. People was coming up and talking to me, and you know, like, this is like mad posh, you know, all of these like these sort of beautiful European women with fantastic hair, you know what I mean, coming up and like trying to talk to me about like maths and shit. And I was like and I said to my mate, why does everybody know who I am? And he goes, oh, it's because of your grades, right? Nobody expected that from you. So that was the first time, really, when I was at London School of Economics, that I realised that rich people expect poor people to be stupid. I won my job in a card game, basically, and I used that fact, basically, that people thought I was dumb to win the card game.
I want to know more about this card game, because people will find this fascinating if they've got no idea about finance and how this world works. What is this trading game? How does it work and how did you get involved?
Yeah, so this is the thing, right? So my whole plan at university, you get the best grades and you get the best job. That was my plan.
Get rich or die try.
Yeah, but this is what I thought, it's what they tell you at school, right? Yeah. You get the best grades, you're going to get the best job. And then I went to LSE and I've got good grades in my first year. And then I come in second year and this mad thing happened, which was like actual way that you get a job is not you get the best grades. The way that you get a job is you get an internship in your second year. They're giving the jobs out before they give the grades out.
It's all networking as well, isn't it?
It's networking, yeah. But the other big thing is extracurriculars. So I was like, fuck, like, what am I going to do? So basically, like, I started to be a bit of a dick at university because I was like, I was convinced I was the smartest kid at the university. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I thought I was, basically.
So you had a bit of this, like, the confidence was definitely there. Like,
yeah, I was backing it. Yeah, because I knew I was winning these competitions. Yeah. I didn't even have a desk, you know what I mean? So I knew I was good, right? But, like, that wasn't enough because I couldn't play the clarinet. So I was fucked, basically. So I started to be, like, very aggressive at university. And then, basically, that worked. So one day I was in a library and this guy from the year above, I didn't even know who he was, just walked up to me. He's like, are you Gary Stevenson? I was like, yes. And he was like, listen, Citibank hire one trader a year through a card game, which is basically a maths game. You should enter the game. Basically, I was like, finally, I can get a job without having to play the fucking clarinet. You know what I mean? Like, I entered this event and it was like a card game. It's kind of like a poker style game, but the betting mechanism was made to look like a trading floor. So you're buying and selling from one another. But really, you break it down, it was a pure numbers game. By the time I got to the final, I was like the best person in the world at this game. I was like obsessed with this game. And that was it, yeah. And they gave me a job and they let me start trading from day one. So I started trading when I was just 21 years old.
Well, in a few years, you were making so much money. Like, I think you've said yourself, like, I never expected it to be this much. Can you give us a bit of an indication of how lucrative this was?
I mean, so my first bonus, which I got at the beginning of 2010 when I was 23 years old, I got paid £395,000.
Pounds?
Yeah, pounds. Wow. So that's, I don't know, nearly $800,000. Yeah, but obviously, yeah, not just that, this is more than 15 years ago. Obviously, people will be listening to that and they'll be like, oh, that's amazing. I wish I could make £395,000 in my first year. And obviously, it was good. But the truth is, I hadn't been expecting that. And also, I wasn't actually ready for that. It kind of like blew my mind. Like, and I felt like I couldn't tell no one. I felt like I couldn't tell my girlfriend. To this day, I never spoke to my parents about it.
You're embarrassed.
No, it's not embarrassed. It felt almost like criminal. This is the thing, you got to understand. My dad was working from early until late every day for £20,000 a year. And it's not just my dad. I grew up in a very poor area, you know what I mean? So, like, you go into an office and you're playing a computer game, you know what I mean? And you're getting paid £300. And that's just my first year. I think I was scared. But I was just, I remember, like, it was so mad. I come out of the office and I remember sitting on my chair. And I felt like I was going to start crying.
Wow. Wow, this is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Gary Stevenson, or Gary's Economics, as you may know him. He's in Australia as part of a speaking tour. We're talking inequality, hearing Gary's story from poverty to millionaire in a couple of short years. On the text line, Ben in Bondi says, Gary is an amazing guy. His book was an outstanding read. Yeah, a lot of fans definitely listening right now to what Gary has to say. Gary, you're telling us you were earning all of this money in this job that you had in finance, but you were feeling strange about it. So at that point, are you immediately thinking, I don't want to be part of this?
Not really.
Okay.
There was a part of me that was thinking, fuck, all the poverty starts to seem like a dance. It seems like a thing that we're forced to do just to dance for the rich people, you know what I mean? Because the money was fucking there to begin with, you know what I mean? But then, to be honest, you know, I was 23. The next thing you're thinking is, well, if I made 400 grand, I'm 23. What did that guy make? What did that fucking posh guy in the pink shirt make? You know what I mean? They must be making millions. Because I was like, fuck this. This is unfair, but I'm going to fucking take it. Why should these guys get paid millions and not me?
You'd come so far already and you were making money predicting basically that the world was screwed. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so, you know, at first, obviously, I started in 2008. Then you have this big financial crisis. Everybody had been predicting, like, things are going to get better really quickly. But then what was actually happening was the economy was not getting better. People's lives were not getting better. What I could see at the time, ordinary families were like, losing their properties, basically. You could see young people couldn't afford to buy houses, even though their parents, who in many cases were not even earning particularly high wages, could have bought houses. So families are losing their homes.
Mm.
And then what I could see, because we had access to the data, we could see that government wealth is collapsing. So if government wealth is collapsing and middle class family wealth is collapsing, well, where's the wealth going? Well, obviously, I'm surrounded by these guys making £1 million a year. So you can see, because if ordinary people like can't afford to run a balanced budget when they own their own home, well, what when you don't own your own home and you're paying rent every month until you die, you definitely can't. And if the governments can't run a balanced budget when they have wealth and they're not in debt, well, then they're not going to be able to run a balanced budget when they are massively in debt. And if the rich are able to accumulate and grow their money when they've got a lot of money, but when they've got even more money, it's going to grow even quicker. So you could see this is going to get worse. This is going to get worse. And that was really like what I made my big money on was in 2011, betting basically that the global economy would never recover.
So you're saying everything's stuffed, everything's going to keep getting worse. And weirdly, you're making money by predicting this. When did you decide, I don't like this, it doesn't sit well with me, I want to get out? You were 27 years old,
yeah.
But what was it that made you really decide, I've got to end this?
By the end of 2011, I was so obsessed. I was, you know, that amount of money is more than my family's made since the beginning of fucking time. You know, we're talking about a lot more than 400 grand now. Now I'm the best trader in the fucking bank and I'm a multimillionaire. And I thought, why am I here? I don't need this money. And of course, now I have this knowledge, which is everything's going to be shit forever. And, you know, these guys around me, they can forget it because they're from rich families. But that's my fucking mum, everybody I grew up with, you know what I mean? So the truth is, I just felt like kind of sick and kind of empty. And the part of me that said you have to do something was kind of a voice in the background that really grew slowly over time.
It's wild to think you're trapped in this system.
Mm.
That's a crazy situation. Everyone would think you'd have all of the freedoms and liberty in the world, but that's definitely not what you were feeling.
Listen, the truth is, you go onto that trading floor, every motherfucker's trapped on that trading floor. Not all of them. But the truth is, most of these guys, they gave away their youths for money. They married the woman who kind of married them because they were rich. You know what I mean? And then they, the kids are in private school. They got a nice big house, a nice big mortgage. They can't leave that job. The truth is, in a very unequal country, in a very unequal world, there's only two things you can be. You can be fucking poor or you can be separated from the whole of humanity. There's only two options. And I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to live on either side of that barbed wire fence. You know what I mean? I don't want to live in that world. You know, one of the reasons I like Australia is because to some significant degree, you still are a middle-class country where your average person, you know, working as whatever, a bricklayer, a taxi driver, a hairdresser, a teacher, a nurse, can still live a good quality of life. And one of the reasons why I'm here and I'm doing this tour in Australia is because I want Australians to realise if you do not take care of your wealth distribution and your growing inequality, you will lose that just like we are losing that. My dad worked for the post office for 35 years for 20 grand a year and was able to buy a house and have a family and have a pension and have a retirement. Is that true nowadays in England? Is that true nowadays in Australia? What I want is a world where ordinary people can have a good quality of life. The reason I'm here in Australia is because I think you have a great chance, maybe more than any other country, of protecting that equality and protecting that distribution. And I want you guys to help me fight for this.
there'd be a lot of young Australians maybe a bit surprised to hear that because they feel that opportunity's already gone, that they look at their lives and they think, I will never get a property, like I'll never own a home, yeah. or if I do, I'll be in debt for the rest of my life. I can't afford to live where I want to or the life I want to lead. I've got a good job. I'm a teacher. I'm a nurse. I work hard every day.
Listen, there's a lot of guys on the internet nowadays that are going to say, the reason that you can't buy a house is because you're not entrepreneurial enough. And if you want to be rich and buy a house, you just got to like be an entrepreneur and you'll wake up at 4 a.m. and you got to hustle, hustle, hustle. And you got to buy Bitcoin and do some trading on the internet. What I say is fuck that. Fuck that. It's not your fault. It's not your fault you're poor because the governments of this country and the older generations of this country failed to protect an economic system that worked for working people. Listen, your dad and your granddad didn't have to trade fucking Bitcoin on the internet to make money. Didn't have to wake up at 4 a.m. and do some fucking hustle culture and start free businesses and read 7 self-help books. You know what I mean? They got rich and they bought houses by working regular jobs. You're in a situation now where it's clearly becoming systemically impossible for working class Australians to buy houses. And they're telling you that is your fault as an individual. The way to fix that is to work together, stand together, act politically. Listen, you might think that's not my job. You know what I mean? I'm just a regular guy. You know, it's not my job to fix it. I'm going to rely on Albo. I'm going to rely on the politicians to fix it. Listen, I never met Albo. Maybe he's a nice guy. But the truth is, from what I've seen of politicians in my country, these guys are very comfortable and they're not going to fix it. Regular Australians, regular British people, regular working people need to stand together, understand the significance of inequality and make it very, very clear to the politicians, unless you deal with inequality, unless you tax the rich more fairly, unless you protect our share of the pie, we'll never vote for you again. That's the only way you're going to get them to listen.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Gary Stevenson. Gary's economics, as you can tell, bit of bad language in here. So a language warning for people. It's an honest conversation. There is quite a bit of swearing, but got a lot of messages coming through. Someone says, Gary, it's already cooked here. A labourer used to be able to support a family and service a mortgage. Now two skilled incomes aren't enough. Someone else on Hack's Instagram, if you go after the ultra wealthy, they're going to leave this country. It's already happening in the UK. Interesting point. I want to ask Gary about that in a minute. But first, Gary, that a housing crisis in Australia, it's what everyone's talking about. How do you think we fix it?
It's distribution. I know they're going to tell you we're going to build more, we're going to build more, we're going to build more. You know, go to Mumbai and tell me if that worked. Go to Mexico City, you know, go to Bogota. Lived in Tokyo, 40 million people. It's more population than your entire country. Is housing affordable? No. You're not going to build your way out. Listen, if you allow... Listen, let's take somebody with a wealth of 1 billion Aussie. So just the poorest billionaire in the whole country, right? Their passive income on that is going to be 50 million Aussie dollars. That's a conservative estimate. 1 million Aussie dollars a week. Okay. How are your kids going to compete to buy housing with somebody whose passive income is $1 million a week? You know, these guys, they can't spend that money. The only thing they can do is buy assets. And that's why you're seeing every single asset price in the entire world go up. It's not just, this problem is not just in Australia. It's happening in the UK. It's happening in Canada. It's happening in France. It's happening in Spain. It's happening in China. It's happening in Japan. Everyone is right. These assets are going up all over the world, right? If you allow these people to accumulate all of the wealth in the world, then the obvious consequence is you will have no wealth. And you're out there paying 40, 50% tax. These guys pay nothing. These guys pay virtually nothing as a percentage of their income. You need to take action on this. You cannot imagine that you'll just build your way out of it whilst allowing a tiny group of society to accumulate more and more and more of the wealth and the power. The reason you cannot afford a house is because the rich are outbidding you.
So you're saying one of the answers here is to change the system in terms of tax and start taxing the mega rich. And yeah. You're focusing on the super, super rich, right?
We say tax wealth, not work. I use that slogan intentionally, because when I say, if you say tax the rich, people think it's about lawyers and doctors. Listen, if you're working, you already lost capitalism. The only way to win capitalism is to have a rich dad nowadays. So it's not about tax. Workers already pay a lot of tax. I paid more than 50% to drag my family out of poverty. And I made millions of pounds and I'm happy and I'm proud of that. At the same time, the Duke of Westminster earned £10 billion, which is more than 3,000 times what I made, paid nothing. If that is a tax system that you have, and I know Australia has an incredibly similar tax system, then of course, in 10, 15, 20 years, the billionaires own everything. And the consequence of that is that ordinary people own nothing.
the argument against this that we always hear is if you bring in these policies, if you reform the tax system, it's going to mean people aren't going to want to invest in this country. It's going to mean everyone's going to leave. They're going to go find another place where the tax laws are more favourable and we're going to end up in this horrible situation. What do you say to that?
First thing to say is, what is important is not the wealthy people. What is important is the wealth that they own. It's the assets that they own. And what is that wealth in Australia? It's fucking houses and it's minerals under the ground, right? What are they going to do? They're going to take it with them. These guys are not Gandalf, you know what I mean? If they disappear, the houses don't disappear. The houses are still here. You know, let them leave. Let them sell the fucking houses so that regular working class Australians can buy houses again. Listen, and I know it's not easy to implement these policies and you do need to be careful and you do need to be careful about design. And, you know, I'd be willing to help and work with the Australian government, the British government, the American government, European governments on designing these policies.
We've got something happening in politics at the moment that is getting a lot of attention in terms of the future of our Conservative Party in particular, where it's heading, whether it needs to be more moderate and more conservative. Then we've got populist parties, similar to Nigel Farage, I would imagine, gaining in popularity here. And one of the interesting things about that is they're super popular with the very poor and the extremely wealthy.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think the very poor have been really badly served by politics for 20 years now, longer, to be honest. They've been, and they, you know, they vote for centre-left parties. For a long time, these voters traditionally voted for centre-left parties when they voted. Did it work? Did it improve their living standards? It didn't, to be honest. I think the poorest people in society haven't moved forward for 20, 25 years. And they're pissed off and they want something different. You know, when Barack Obama ran in the US, he ran on this slogan of hope and change, hope and change. Did it work for regular people? People are sick of these politicians who are just tinkering around the edges and they want serious change. So at the moment, you have to look at what are the alternative voices. Now, I'm working as hard as I can to build an alternative voice. But unfortunately, there's a much louder voice, both here and in the UK and in Europe and in the US, which says the problem is foreigners, the problem is immigrants. But what is behind that voice, in most cases, is funding from billionaires.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Gary Stevenson. Gary's economics, we've got so many messages coming through. A lot of people supporting Gary's thoughts here, others questioning what he's saying. Gary, we don't have much time left, but I want to ask you, what is your message to Australians? As someone here from the UK, what's your warning?
I live in a country now where half of the country cannot simultaneously feed their kids and turn the heating on in winter. Half the country. Just 30 or 40 years ago, my dad working less than average income could buy a house. That is the direction that you can go in. Listen, I'm coming here with a message from the future. Okay, you are lucky in this country. You still have a relatively good distribution of wealth and relatively good wages and living standards for working people. And I know, as you say, we're starting to see the cracks. We're starting to see the unaffordable housing. This can and will get a lot worse if you don't deal with it. And I know Australia is a country which loves freedom and it probably doesn't like the idea of higher taxes. But it is also a country which considers itself to be an equal country and considers it to be a place where everybody gets a fair go. Is that happening now?
Can I ask you what you predict life is going to look like, the economy is going to look like, the future is going to look like for our generation, for us when we're old? Like in 40 years' time, as someone who's made a lot of money on predictions, what do you think the world's going to look like?
Before I answer that question, I kind of have to take a little bit of a step back here, right? Because I am somebody who developed a theory 15 years ago that living standards are going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And the truth is that was a significant causative effect in me having a mental breakdown, right? So I don't want to just come here on Australian ABC, tell young people the future's totally fucked, right? Without sitting it first and saying, listen, shit is going to be bad, but we can deal with it. We can stop it. We can change it. We don't live in the 80s and 90s anymore. We don't live in a situation where the future's getting better and better. And that's hard to accept. When people say, you know, you can't tax the rich, you can't reduce inequality, I look at what happened in the 20th century. I look at my grandma and how poor she grew up and then how enormously living standards improved for working people in just 20, 30, 40 years during the 20th century. We did it before. We moved from extreme poverty to a situation where ordinary working people like my dad, like your dad probably, could work a regular job and buy a house and have security. We can fight back. We can change it. Acting together and not trying to fight this like one at a time like a fucking Bruce Lee movie. It doesn't win. You need to act politically. You need to go together.
Gary Stevenson, Gary's Economics. Great to chat. Thank you so much for joining us on
Thanks,
Hack.
Thanks, boss. Thanks for your time.
Hack on Triple J.
And if you want to listen to that full interview, there is a longer chat. It's a good 10 minutes longer, I'd say. You can go check it out on Hack's podcast now. We put the full interview up this morning. We've got a lot of messages coming through on this. Not everyone agrees with Gary. Someone says, what he's saying is kind of interesting, but I think he'd freak out if he did a law degree as well, that person says. But overwhelmingly, I think we've got a lot of support here. Adam saying tax reform is the answer. Tax the rich, the corporate sector, the mining sector. Another person, I've never heard of Gary before, but I effing love him, that person saying. And someone else says, listening to this, I was thinking just another author trying to sell a get rich quickly book, but listening, I really resonate with what Gary has to say about wealth inequality. That is all we've got time for on Hack for now.